103.9 FM, WOZO Radio, Knoxville.
Deadpool is another argument about what a hero actually is, right?
Give it to me then.
What's the argument?
Yeah.
The point is that he shows very positive virtues. He sticks up for people who really can't stick up for themselves in certain circumstances.
Sure. Yeah.
He's also really funny. So it's just like, oh, he's enthusiastic and funny. Is that a good thing? Well, you enjoy watching him do it, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Maybe I should try to learn to be more enthusiastic and open and funny, right? But Deadpool also kills people.
Yeah, like he's like one-ton psychotic killer. Like, does that balance itself out? I wonder. Like, there's the argument right there.
Yeah,
right. Exactly.
To quote a line from Schwarzenegger movies. Yeah, but they were bad. They were bad people.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, August 25th, 2019. And if it's not where you're listening, then it's a rebroadcast of the show or a podcast. I'm Dotter Five, and as usual, we have Wombat on the phone with us. Hello, Wombat.
It's the Wombat! I'm ready to go. Let's have a fun time today, guys.
Yay! And Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstitions. And if you get the... if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Today's topic is, philosophy of Christianity or religion in general? And we have a guest with us today. Ty, would you like to introduce your guest?
Sure thing. So we're going to be talking about truth and how people determine if things are true or not. But it could also stretch to things that are outside of religion. And I thought it was really cool to bring up someone who's really interested in trying to do this as a project. His name's Human Ape. And welcome to the show. Hey, Human Ape, what's up?
Good. I thought it was going to be Honest Ape.
Hey, Honest Ape. There you go, Honest Ape. Let's go.
Doesn't matter either way. But I'm well.
Honest Ape, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, about the project that you're going through, too?
I'm a teacher. So that's my interest. I'm naturally interested in how people can know things and how my students can know things. And so kind of in short, the idea is just to have conversations about that openly. And that's what I try to do. I'm going to try to do kind of like a street epistemology style, or I want to start doing videos like that soon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with people at... some mentors at some of the schools that I work at have been helping me with these ideas and develop them. But the basic idea is just to have a conversation with people about what's true, kind of go with our, kind of write down those intuitions that we all have,
sure.
That we all tend to have,
mm-hmm.
and then to start to talk about some of the beliefs and see if that really is matching up with kind of our intuitions of what we would say is true or not.
So if I can understand this, like you'll have a conversation with someone outside, like maybe at a park or something, and you'll ask them, so like, what does it take? What's your criteria for determining if something's true? And then you guys will work together to write down that criteria or like have some sort of record of it. And then you'll talk about an actual belief that they believe is true and compare it to that criteria. Is that more or less?
Yes.
It?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the short of it. It's not, I haven't talked to anybody necessarily at a park yet. I have talked to people that I disagree with, politically, and my students
okay.
obviously are the two main crowds for me so far, but I am trying to expand that and to make it more inclusive and kind of global.
Okay.
Sure.
So, friends and 4-year olds
and students.
No. Oh yeah, you're talking about the students. Yeah, uh-huh. the students are of college age.
Okay, great.
I don't know if I mentioned that.
No, yeah, like no. Sometimes that's even worse as far as like maturity levels go. But yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're right. You are right about that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Hey, let's write it down on the list.
Yeah. One thing. Let's get right into it. One of the first things that you mentioned was how it matches up with your intuitions.
Yeah.
Our intuitions can be flavored very strongly by earliest knowledge training. They could be dead wrong due to that. So how do you address that problem?
Yeah, so you're right about that. That's the point of the conversation, right? So the point of the conversation is to list those intuitions, and if there's a reason for challenging that intuition, to go ahead and challenge it.
Yeah.
Right? But what I found in doing this practice myself is that that's not actually that necessary, at least for me. In my conversations that I've had, it usually actually is good enough to just talk about those intuitions. And what I find is we tend to agree when I'm talking with somebody. It's just like, oh, how do you determine? And so, for instance, kind of the list that I made, but one of those things is, like, if we can observe it, we have a certain amount of confidence that we can say that it exists, right? That's how that's one way we can know what's true, possibly.
Well, you can misinterpret the senses, but I mean, yes, I would agree with you pretty much there.
I would say it's more confident than not seeing it at all.
Say that again?
I would say it makes me more compelled than not seeing it at all.
Exactly, right? And the point is that a lot of people have that intuition. Like, even people that you might disagree with heavily in terms of religion or politics are going to say that as one of the potential ways to figure out what's true. Well, I'm going to observe things. Now, again, there are complications to that.
Yeah.
Obviously, we talk about what those complications are. But you get this very natural kind of progression of a conversation where these things come up naturally. And these are also linked to the philosophers have already essentially had this conversation. We have the empiricists, right? The empiricists in philosophy, they're going to come along and say, well, if we can observe it, we can be sure of it. But then there are philosophers who are like, hold on, that's not exactly right.
Right.
And they have their challenges to that proposition.
Yeah, right.
Right. And it's become this complex conversation about epistemology. But what's so great about it to me is that I have found that a lot of them are intuitive, and that's great for building common ground between people and creating a standard for us to be like, okay, now we have a standard. Let's see if we can hold ourselves to the standard, or if we need to possibly revise the list. Does the list need to be changed instead of our beliefs, or should we change our beliefs instead of the lists? You know, and just have that type of conversation.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. I can see the idea behind it. Would you say then that you've had conversations that were always like key towards an agreement between the two of you as far as like what you find to be intuitively true? Or is there cases where it's like, hey, both of us are having problems with this. What should we do at this point?
So the biggest complication for me has been that we tend to agree about how to decide what's true in kind of the sense that we end up talking about. But when it comes to other things, people seem to want to build a separate list for those beliefs that they want to keep. Right?
That's interesting.
And so that is also something that you have to accommodate for. So, for instance, when we're talking about the list of how to decide, when I've talked about the list with my friend who is a Christian, he kind of just like, well, yes, I agree that this is how we're going to determine what's true, but in terms of my faith, that's different. Right?
Well, yeah, why did they throw up that that barrier, though, if they're actually trying to get to the truth? Can't they recognize that their faith might be a barrier to getting to the truth?
Right. I know, and I think what I do at that point is I'm like, okay, well, what does that look like then? If there's a separate list, let's look at that list too.
Yeah.
Right.
And find out which one's more reliable, if anything. Right.
Say that again. Sorry.
And find out which one of the two is more reliable for coming to like a true conclusion.
Right. Nothing should be exempt from examination.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's also an intuition that we have too. I found that most people are open to discuss these things, which is really great.
What do you do if there's something true that can't be reached intuitively?
What do you do if there's a truth that can't be reached intuitively?
Yeah.
Like quantum
or
science.
Even more simple stuff. Physics like, stuff. Hey, you know, the more dense something is, the smaller it could be. So that seems weird. It's like intuitively bigger things are heavier than smaller things. Why is it that when something can get smaller but be more dense, it weighs more? Like it's not as an intuitively understandable thing to understand. It's like inverse relationships aren't necessarily intuitive. You have to like sit up for a couple of seconds and be like, oh, okay, now I get it. But it's not an intuitively understood thing. Or, you know, like there's a lot of stuff that it's a little bit more complicated, but it isn't necessarily intuitively true. And that can go on to multiple levels, to even the thing that Doubter 5 was mentioning. So what do you do if you're having a conversation and you're trying to reach an intuitive truth, but it's just not there, but it's still true?
Yeah, so I think those things that are counterintuitive are kind of subsumed in the practice of good induction, like properly done induction. So
what do you mean by induction? We have
logical training, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean it is. It's recognizing that so you can't always observe something directly, right? That's the truth. The truth is that there's some things that we can't observe directly that we're still going to say are true. So for instance, I can't really observe Abraham Lincoln live his life, right?
Yeah.
But I still do believe that Abraham Lincoln, there was a person named Abraham Lincoln who lived a life. And the reason that I think that isn't because I've observed Abraham Lincoln live his life. It's because I've seen pictures of him in history books, and I've read news articles, and I've observed other things that I'm going to use as evidence to build the idea that Abraham Lincoln was a person that actually existed.
There's a trail of evidence, actually.
Or really, it's a really mundane thing to believe that we had a president. We've had over 40 of them, and they've been stretched back over time. So to say that we've had a president named Bob, it's like, sure, why not? Like,
true. You know, that's true too.
Yeah, like we can figure that out. That's fairly mundane, and we can get a standard of evidence that meets that claim fairly readily, because it's a mundane claim, mundane amount of evidence to support.
Right, and it doesn't cost you anything to believe it.
I don't think that's a good reason to believe anything, but yeah, that is true.
No, I mean, it's a good reason not to believe something if it's questionable in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And I've been thinking of ways to even incorporate that idea into all of this, is like, because it is true that the type of claim kind of dictates in some ways what you need in terms of evidence.
Right.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Sure.
So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah. What was it? Carl Sagan said, you know, incredible claims require incredible evidence.
More or less. Yeah.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
That's the word.
And I would say, like, if you got someone from like a tribe in the Amazon who's never heard of a president before, that would seem extraordinary to them. But we should be able to have that evidence to substantiate that, to the point where it's just so commonplace. It's like, oh, okay, so it's like a village leader, but for a bigger place. Okay, I get that. That's now mundane now. Like, it might be extraordinary at the beginning, but as long as you can support it with evidence, then you have a good reason to believe it. And if we can't come up with good evidence for presidents existing, then he's in his right to not be convinced that that's the case. Yeah. It's not his fault that he doesn't believe it. It's our fault for not doing our research and presenting to him in a good manner that makes a compelling argument for why this obviously mundane thing actually exists or not.
And it's also, some people, it's not really important whether they existed or not. Their ideas stand by themselves, like
that's interesting.
Aristotle and Plato, you know, their writings, whether they existed or not, as they, you know, we believe that they existed as Aristotle. As long as the ideas are valid, we can just go with the ideas.
Sure.
No matter who wrote them.
I can say that goes beyond just historical figures to figures that we know now don't exist, but maybe in the future they might be turned into religions. But like, you have like, you know, your comic book heroes who like stand for justice, responsibility. What's Spider-Man's main thing? Like, great power requires great responsibility or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there are like solid catchphrases that you like see in fictional characters that can still stand apart from them as people and more be as ideals for how to interact with people and conduct yourself.
Look at Confucius and Buddha. I mean, sure, they may or may not be real people, but their ideas stand.
Yeah.
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 They are religious.
That's an important point, too.
We were talking to an atheist before, or not an atheist, an Episcopalian, who's now an atheist, by the way, after a couple of conversations. Yeah, our last guest. He's finally out of the closet.
Very good.
The thing for him was he loved gods. Like, he loved a lot of examples of gods, and he found a lot of value in, like, researching them. Though he didn't take them as a literal truth, he did see value in, like, what they stood for, and he believed in that. And once he was able to parse the two of like, hey, I know this isn't real, but I do love them as a character. He's like, okay, well, if I don't believe it, I'm an atheist. But I still like these characters. I'm like, I love a lot of God. Like, a lot of, as characters, there's plenty of them. Like, I've just played.
Look at Thor.
Yeah, I love Thor. Thor, Taika Waititi's Thor, great. But I've also played a game called Assassin's Creed that has, like, a bunch of, like, you know, Peloponnesian gods, Greek gods, the Roman pantheon. And you're like, whoa, these characters are so interesting. And the dynamics they have with each other are so great that I just picked up books and started reading about them. And I'm like following like the mythology of these, you know, deities. And it's really enjoyable for me. So like, there's nothing wrong with loving a god. In fact, I would say there's more atheists that love the caricature of like atheists hate God. isn't true at all, but you will definitely find atheists that love a lot of different kind of gods. So it's actually kind of interesting.
You could probably consider me that on an extreme end.
Sure.
I think that the idea of, I love the idea of narratives, and I actually think that they can be a great another great common ground for people. And I think that the way that in terms of, so we've had this conversation about truth now.
Yeah.
Right. I think narratives help us have conversations about morality in some way. There might be some overlap there, but you know, when I go to a movie, I've said this to you before. When I go to a movie, I feel like I'm being, somebody's arguing with me. Like the person who made that movie is arguing with me about what it means to be the protagonist and what it means to be the antagonist. And what are the qualities I see in the protagonist that I'm really going to agree with the director? Oh yeah, that is what makes a good human, and I want to emulate that a little bit more now. And this is you know, like Harry Potter. What makes Harry Potter a protagonist? Sure. Well, he's close to his friends. He's willing to sacrifice himself in certain circumstances. He's generally kind to people. He sticks up for the underdog.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what makes him Harry Potter. That's what makes him a good human and the protagonist. And who's the antagonist? The antagonist is literally the opposite of that.
Spoilers.
In the film.
Spoiler alert, guys. All right, go on.
Do we have to do that? I'm sorry.
No.
If you haven't seen Harry Potter, I feel sorry for you. You should do it. It's a great narrative. But sorry. That's where I'll end that conversation.
Okay. No, just playing with you. I was just playing. Sorry for interjecting. But yeah, I agree. I do think like it's sort of like a debate between a battle of different ideologies, and you might find yourself inspired to root for one of the characters just based on how they are conducting themselves, because you see value in that if that was like adopted by the general public to act in that particular way. Like, but I also like anti-hero movies too. Like I mean, I like my Deadpools, I like my Transporters.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But those are also, to me, arguments too. Deadpool is another argument about what a hero actually is, right?
Oh, give it to me then.
What's the argument?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So the argument is, can you still have so Deadpool? What are his virtues, right? He has the idea of an anti-hero is they have these quote unquote virtues versus these other things that were like, we don't know how we feel about that.
Okay.
So he still cares about the. Now I'm going to start I don't want to spoil. So the point is that he shows very positive virtues. He sticks up for people who really can't stick up for themselves in certain circumstances.
Sure, yeah.
He's also really funny. So it's just like, oh, he's enthusiastic and funny. Is that a good thing? Well, you enjoy watching him do it, right?
Right.
Maybe I should try to learn to be more enthusiastic and open and funny, right? But Deadpool also kills people.
Yeah, like he's like wanton psychotic killer. Like, does that balance itself out? I wonder. Like, there's the argument right there.
Yeah,
exactly.
To quote a line from Schwarzenegger movies. Yeah, but they were bad. They were bad people.
Yeah. It's just like, is what balances? Like, sure, he's definitely agreeable. He's definitely funny. He seems like a cool guy to hang out with, but he's also psychotic, a fundamental core. So it's just like, does one counteract the other as far as like, here's an example of a person, is the argument like psychopaths can be funny people too?
No, I think the question is I think what you're being asked to do is Deadpool's action in a certain scene the right decision, even though it's murdering? So, for instance, when he murders the whole Yakuza, which is the beginning of the film, so I don't feel like it's that big of a spoiler.
No, go for it.
the question becomes, if you actually had the ability to stop the Yakuza, would it be the right thing to do? Hmm. Now, he enjoys it, right? So that might be another level. Like, is it okay to enjoy it even? You know? Yeah. Right? That's another question. But that is still something that you can kind of grapple with as the audience and think about and really assess critically and think about your own morality and how it stands to that. And if there's things to consider, is there a time to kill? Hmm. You know? Is there a time to do that? Is it right?
Every nation on earth would say yes to that because they have standing armies and which are prepared to kill if necessary.
On an individual vigilante level.
No, I'd say every nation would agree that no, it's not at that level.
I would say the same mechanics that made characters that are intriguing and worthwhile to talk about, like over multiple generations, like Deadpool or Superman or Spider-Man, is the same mechanisms that we probably used to come up with a lot of the God claims that we had way back in the past. And as we present like these characters, like Odin, for example, who's like, yeah, he's powerful, but he's very conniving and will backstab you, despite the fact that he's like one of the most powerful and should be most altruistic gods in existence, or Loki, or, I mean, there's characters in the Bible that do the same thing too, and
Absolutely. They
inspire conversation. I'd say as atheists, we have the ability to say like, hey, we love these characters, we love talking about these characters, we're really intrigued by them, but that could be a separate conversation from whether or not they're actually true or not. And
Absolutely. And
if we can separate, once we separate those two, it's like now we have this whole worthwhile world of mythology that we can like dissect and connect with together without having the weight of taking it literally, you know. And I think there's value in that. So would you say that's kind of close to what you were trying to do with your outgoing, or what is it mischaracterizing that?
No, I think that's exactly it. Okay. That is that's hammer on nailhead. Yeah, that's.
So, what are the things? Some of the things that you discover or discuss in your classes? Can you go to some examples?
Yeah.
Well, and the classes and the conversations I have with conservatives are going to be different.
Okay.
So, the conversations that I usually have. So, I'm more willing to talk about spiritual things with a conservative, or those those narratives, right? With my class, I'm more interested in making sure that they understand academic epistemology. And so when we talk about building, we focus much more on that conversation of truth, because I feel like morality, in terms of philosophy gets a lot more mucky.
Sure.
And I trust them to deal with it. We have some basic conversation, but really what I like to do is, okay, we've made this list of how to determine what's true. Now let's go look at sources. So we'll look at opinion sources, we'll look at news sources, and we'll look at academic sources. And we'll say, are they doing things that we would expect given this conversation about truth? Are they doing those things that we said were the proper ways to build truth? And what they tend to find is that the opinion sources don't really do it nearly as well as the academic or the scientific. How scientific or academic discourse happens.
Method of science per se.
Do they walk away from that conversation thinking opinions are less valuable than like the news or academic sources? And do you inspire them to? Do you in any way find or explain some value in the opinion?
Yeah. So what we talk about. So first of all, it's based on who the opinion piece is from, right? So that's the thing, is you're analyzing those opinion sources individually. So you might actually come away feeling like, oh, well, that opinion source did really well about being careful with their claims and qualifying when we said they should qualify.
Mm.
Qualifying being like just limiting your claims. So I'm not going to say all, I'm going to say most, right?
Right.
Oh, they used most correctly, right? This is just a general idea that they get. Generally, they become more skeptical of opinion pieces and they become more confident in academic works, which is great by the time they go to the research project. Cause I'm like, now you actually understand why we tell you to use academic sources.
Hmm.
Right. That's why this is our standard.
Uh-huh.
It's like we didn't just make it up. It's not something we're trying to brainwash you with.
No, it's like a higher quality of, thoroughly investigated data compared to what something could just be said. Or misinterpreted or mischaracterized.
That's a more reliable method to getting to the truth.
There you go.
Right. Yeah. Right. And they're talking to each other, too. So sometimes they'll have an opinion piece, And it's also the case a lot of times where usually if the opinion piece is really good at what it's doing, at making claims and stuff, it usually tends to agree with the academic interpretations or represent those in some way, even though there are still complications there, which we talk about.
Sure. Yeah.
Because you never know what they're leaving out of an opinion piece. They can include all the stuff that agrees with them, which actually exists, but they could leave out a lot of things that doesn't.
I like the idea that it's not necessarily, is this thing an opinion or a news article or an academic piece that determines whether or not it's reliable? It's the standard that they're using that determines if it's reliable. And if you actually we're getting closer to the bottom of the hour, but let's talk about this when we get back from the break. How about that? This is 103.9 FM radio. We're coming to you from the Birdhouse. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, and we're going to be back right after the break. See you guys.
Okay. Sounds good.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show.
Three, Digital two, Free Thought Radio one.
Hour. Simply the best.
Welcome back. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM here. I'm Dr. Five. With us, we have the Wombat. Say hello, Wombat.
I'm the Wombat!
And we have Honest Ape. Say hello, Honest Ape.
How's it going?
It's going well. And let's talk about, just for a second, the free thought groups that are here in Knoxville, Tennessee that you might be able to join. If you don't have one where you live, start one.
Yeah.
The Atheist Society of Knoxville has 950 members. It's available on Meetup. You can go to Meetup or you can go to KnoxvilleAtheist.org. There's also the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They're found at Rationalists.org. The Sunday Assembly is a church that started for people who no longer believe in God. They can go to the church anyway and still have the fellowship of a church-type gathering. Just do a Google search for a Sunday Assembly in your area. And there's also a Secular Student Alliance that are in most high schools and colleges now. If you don't have one in your school, start one. It's a free thought movement for those who like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no difference. Now, there's also an Atheist TV call-in show here in Knoxville. Besides the radio show, it's a TV show called Free Thought Forum. It comes out at 6:30 on Wednesdays on Comcast Channel 12, Charter Channel 192. You can also watch some of their archives on YouTube by searching for Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Knock yourself out. It's good stuff. Anyway, back to our show.
You say knock yourself out? I love that. That's good.
That's it. That's cool. No, I didn't say that.
No.
But I like it.
Yeah, we need to coin that. That's better. I like that.
Yeah,
it's like
Barley's
Tap Room Pizzeria, knock yourself out. I love that.
Yeah,
that's good.
Really?
All right. We're freaking stuff out. All right. Anyway, Honest Ape. So you're our guest for the show, and we're talking about the project that you have where you're trying to build connections with people and have conversations about the nature of truth and how we determine if things are true. And I think you said you do it in like a three-part step. You set up a criteria with them, then you ask them about their beliefs, and then you see if they are using that criteria to support that belief that they have. Do you mind talking to us about some of your successful conversations, success stories, breakthroughs, stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. So, first, I'm going to modify that three-part process just a little bit.
You're going to add five more parts.
I'm sorry.
Now go for it.
So basically, we do have that conversation. We examine their beliefs. And by the way, we don't have to do it to them. If they want to kind of reverse that, if they want to ask me how I decide what's true and compare that to one of my beliefs,
sure.
I also think that's appropriate, or that's a good conversation to have even.
Cool.
And then from there, what I would like to do, which I haven't necessarily fulfilled this part yet, but this is kind of the third step for me, which
is prize fighting.
I'm sorry?
It's the fisticuffs, like you just throw the table across and you start punching each other and see whose ideas last until the end. It's a battle royale of blood and blood sport.
But I what I would hope that they would do is that they would kind of print out that list or pull it up at some point when they're actually confronted with the claim and say, okay, how should I go about assessing this claim step by step in the way that I said I should do it.
So it's their personal list to keep after the end of the conversation?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, that's cool.
And the reason that I'm doing this is because one thing that I found as somebody who used to be a fundamentalist Christian who, to me, the most important parts is I just didn't trust science or academia. I believed a lot of things that were contrary to the data or the scientific consensus or the academic consensus. And the reason that but I still had all the same intuitions that I have now about truth. The only difference to me in my head from my experience is that I didn't really have it in front of me in any moment to like really think about it critically. So for instance, at my old church, there was this claim going around that people generally believed, which was that people in Africa were being raised from the dead. Okay. Right?
Yeah.
And in that moment of being in that church, I kind of just accepted it. Right?
Random question. Isn't that like... And how was that news taken? Was that taken with any degree of excitement? Of like, oh, maybe these guys have figured out some stuff. That's awesome. Great. Maybe we should start learning voodoo?
Or was it like... Yeah. So, you mean in the church,
well,
right?
I want... Because I wasn't privy to what was discussed in the church, but I would imagine a environment where people are looking forward to living in an afterlife, that wouldn't be a surprise to them? Or maybe I've just not been in church for so long that that would still be an alien concept.
The Africa part is actually only significant because there were Christian missionaries over there that helped raise people from the dead.
Okay, there's the
colors. So they were using it as like confirmation that their ideas were genuine.
So it's white people bringing up the brown people that, okay, all right, we got it, we're locked in.
Yeah, basically.
But the news is being imparted by the preacher from the pulpit, is that correct?
Yes. I mean, it's been a while since then. I know that it was a rumor. I think that the pastor did. This is something that they themselves endorsed and said was happening.
Wow.
And so, and the thing is, again, if you had stopped me in that moment as a teenager and just said, hey, let's write down a list of how you decide what's true, it would have invalidated me really accepting that claim. I couldn't observe it. I can't repeatedly observe it. You need that independent verification.
Reproducibility.
Right? That's, I'm sorry?
Reproducibility.
Right, exactly. And so I just didn't have the thing in front of me to really hold myself to a standard.
Right.
Even though if you would have asked me, I'm sure I would have still said, yes, I think observing things is a great way to know that something is real. Yes, I know I can observe things that aren't real, and I need a way to distinguish that. An independent verification is a really good way. And yes, I know that in this circumstance, this claim can't be independently verified. Therefore, I really shouldn't accept it. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
It would have been an intuitive conversation.
The preacher himself, though, this gives me trouble because he's theoretically passing on what the missionaries themselves have seen. And,
right.
And, you know, when you're sitting in the pew and you have missionaries in the field and you wait for the reports to come back, and the reports come back to the preacher, and the preacher is imparting that information to the group, that's got to be incredible news when they hear that. How did they react?
You mean my church? They loved it.
They should have been on their feet.
Yeah.
You know, what words did they use? How did they do that? I want to bring back my mother, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. Basically.
We talked about that event for weeks at that point. That's what it is like something will happen in the church. It'll be news. And then we're talking about it for weeks. It's like our gossip.
And it fades out. How could that possibly fade out?
Yeah, it does. It does.
Linda got a new car. That's the new thing to talk about this day. It's like, ooh,
yeah.
It's a Cadillac.
It's actually interesting you should say that, because when that happened, I remember being really excited for like a week or two.
Yeah.
And then I remember YouTubing, like, can I see videos of this, and not really finding videos, and then just kind of moving on.
Wow, that's awesome.
That was the process.
That's a low standard of evidence.
Yes.
And that's where
and that is the way it usually runs in some circles. So,
jeez,
yeah,
but it became easier once I had that standard. Once I really sat down and thought about, okay, how do I decide? And here it is in front of me. Yeah. I have to be fair. This is how I said I'm going to do it.
So, would you be interested in trying out that method right now, like over the radio with us? Like,
absolutely.
Can we try that?
Yeah, sure.
So, like, how does it start? How do you normally begin?
So are you, do you want to approach this from you asking me how I do it or me asking you?
Try
how
it
with
Doubter 5. I talk so much. Doubter 5, do you have hopefully a mundane belief or something that you're,
me?
Yeah, that you.
Wait, are you talking about Honest Abe right now or,
so
I'm
Honest
sorry,
Abe, I would love to see, I'd love to see you try this method with Doubter 5, who is Larry, who's.
Yeah. Oh, well, I've got a belief the souls aren't real.
Should oh, there you that? Go. It's a classic for the show. Sorry, it's an inside joke for us. But yeah, that's his belief. So how would you go about that?
Okay, so first we want to have that conversation. How do you decide what's true, right? How do you decide that you're going to accept a claim? That's really, I think by the time we get to this the end of this conversation, that's going to be a rejection of a claim, right?
Well, his belief is that they don't exist. That's the belief.
Right, and I'm still not up on the particular. So, for instance, I might okay. So let's just see how it goes.
All right, you're in the driver's seat now.
Right. So how do you go about deciding what's true, that you're going to accept a claim or not accept a claim? What's the process look like?
Well, it's all evidence, you know, and the validity of the evidence. And in 2,000 years, or as long as religions have been claiming that souls exist and go to heaven, which goes back even to the ancient Egyptians, nobody has ever put forward any kind of solid evidence that that they're real. Right. But they assume that every other living thing on the planet has no soul. And but we live forever. I mean, it's kind of a egocentric claim that, you know, I can't possibly die. You know, I've got to have some kind of life after this one. And it just seems arrogant and egocentric to do that.
Right. So this and it also might not necessarily work the same with all the people, but with all people. So I am, this is a bit of a deviation, but I do have a question. And I'm just interested what you would say, which is, would you say that both of these statements are true? That you believe that there are no souls, or that you lack a belief that there are souls?
I'd say both of them.
Both of them. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I actively believe that there are no souls.
Okay.
And
all right.
At the same time, I don't believe them.
Okay. Okay. So let's go back to this idea of evidence, right? Sure. Now, so what constitutes evidence? How do you decide that something is evidence or not?
Well, if I can examine it, if it's something that besides anything better than anecdotal evidence would be helpful. You know, we watch 7 seasons of Ghostbusters, or Ghost Hunters on TV, and theoretically a soul is a ghost and vice versa, and they have never produced one.
They might say a soul is different from a ghost, but I'm not particular on the...
When we talk about ghosts, everybody has different attributes for them. You know, like when they see a ghost, the ghosts are generally clothed. You know, do we have ghost clothing?
Yeah.
You know, they're standing on a floor. Do ghosts have weight? Do they? And why would they stop at the floor? Shouldn't they just go right on through the surface of the earth?
Yeah, there's a really funny comedian that's kind of like, you know, why are there no like 21st century ghosts, you know, that like wake you up in the middle of the night and ask what your Wi-Fi password is or something.
Yeah, it's just to me it seems silly. Nobody's ever given me any evidence other than anecdotal. And are you familiar with David Hume?
Yes.
Okay, he has 3 principles that say that none of this is valid. The first principle is that people lie, or they're mistaken, or they're fooled all the time. This happens. We all know it.
Yeah.
The second rule is that for a miracle claim to be true, the laws of nature, which are immutable, would have to be broken. And the third rule is, because of the first and second rules, no miracle claim, or supernatural claim for that matter, should ever be credited. If you did credit it, then you would have to give more credit to the rules of the universe being broken than that somebody might be mistaken, fooled, or lying. And that, for me, does it.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's this chasm for me in terms of where you're at and what you know about epistemology already. This I would probably get into an air. We could build my list probably pretty easily. You're going to accept that you can observe certain things, but it should be independently verifiable, right? You should be able to look at it, or qualified people should be able to look at it, right?
Right.
You're going to agree that we can also use induction. We don't necessarily have to observe it directly, but we need to be able to observe some evidence that confirms the thing, right?
I would agree.
But that's also problematic because in terms of induction, any new piece of information might validate what you knew before, so you're going to accept it tentatively. You really need to get as much of the data as possible, which kind of requires you to have some type of peer review process where a bunch of other people who are also looking at different data than you are checking what you're observing as well, right?
Okay, sure.
So we're going to agree probably along a lot of this, and we usually get there, but it would just be a lot quicker for you and me. But where you and I think would be at would be the idea of falsification by Karl Popper, which is the idea that we don't I'm still a layman philosopher, so if I mess this up too bad, I'm looking for those types of critiques, but that we don't tend to prove things true so much as we fail to prove them false.
Yeah, and a lot of it comes down to the ability of falsification. If the premise itself is unfalsifiable, then where do you go? Now, you have to make a decision whether you want to believe it on anecdotal evidence or not.
So then my question would be, how is the claim that souls are not real falsifiable?
I don't see that it
is. How would you go about proving that claim false?
You would go about proving that claim false by producing a soul.
Hmm. No, I'm sorry. The claim that souls aren't real, not are real, that would be, you would be right hold on. No. You would prove it false by producing
a soul.
Yeah.
A soul.
Or good, reliable evidence for one, which since we don't have any attributes that we never had a soul to examine, so how do we know what attributes or evidence would be valid for it?
Yeah.
And I will, I'll throw this out real quick. Sorry for interjecting. And I actually like this method a lot. I really do think it's great. Though the distinction here is he's not saying, I know they don't exist. He's saying, I believe and I actively believe that they don't. And is that belief justified based on this, what he's presenting? And for what I'm seeing so far, it seems like, he's coming up with a really good argument to show that there's no case to even start believing in one, so it can't even be a candidate for consideration until someone brings some meaningful evidence to show that this is a possible thing to start believing in. And then we can work on whether or not we know or whatever, stuff like that. But he's not compelled to believe it's true, and he actively believes that it's not true. And that, I mean, both of those things are the things that he can demonstrate. So,
it's belief, and I'm not claiming knowledge.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that careful listening is really important in like these kinds of conversations.
So, what you're saying might be, we might be in agreement here. I don't know if there's going to be some way to semantically split the difference. That's something I might have to think a little bit more about. But just on the face of it, I would say that given the conversation that we've just had, that you seem to be lining up with pretty accurately those intuitions. So that would be how the conversation would go. I need to think about the kind of the nature of falsifiability a little bit more.
Sure,
I had it differently in my head. But again, just given the way the conversation's gone, that I would just say, that's about where we're at, and I would agree with that.
And I can tell you, an SC agreeing with the person that you're talking to is like totally a normal part of it, because you're not there trying to catch them in a trap and flip the tables on them. You're there just trying to learn something, and if it's true, you're gonna absorb it and put it in your pocket. And I think like what Larry's presenting is like a really cool card to put in your pocket as far as like thinking about how to consider if things actually exist or not, and whether or not you should believe them.
Right. Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I'm trying to think of the nature of falsifiability now, which is, so one thing that I like to do, which is a good practice that I encourage my students to do as well, which is to, I think analogies are a very great underused resource. And so what I want to do, or what I usually do in this circumstance, is I think, would I accept this claim in its form, but about something else.
Okay.
That is analogous to it. Good. So, for instance, if we were going to make the claim about fairies, would I get to that same conclusion by saying, I don't believe in fairies, right? And why don't I believe in fairies? Well, because there's not sufficient evidence, right? Or, I'm sorry, I believe that there are no fairies is actually how,
right.
is actually the difference here, right?
Yeah.
I believe there are no fairies, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, so how do you go about falsifying the claim there are no fairies? You would produce a fairy, right?
Yeah. Or evidence, credible evidence.
That's how you would falsify it. So, okay, it is falsifiable, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if falsifiability is just like the first step. Okay, so it's falsifiable. It doesn't mean that it's true. Does all the evidence point towards it?
But just
and that's where I might start to ask, well, what evidence do you have that points towards that? What actual evidence?
So honestly, well, just to interject here.
But we're talking about the difference between belief and no.
Can you hear me at all? I don't think you can hear me.
Yeah, go ahead, Wombat.
Okay, I don't know if you can hear me or not, but I just to interject, the claim that I actively don't believe that there's no fairies and I know that there are no fairies or there are no fairies are different
right.
claims.
Right.
And there's a subtlety there that's significant enough to warrant explanation. Saying I am not convinced that something's the case, I believe it's not the case, versus I know for a fact or I can demonstrate that it's not the case, requires a different standard of evidence to support it. One can be
right.
reached through just reasonable thinking and just saying, hey, I'm actually just convinced that based on these principles that I've read, and I've found that this is a good, reliable way to come to conclusions on what I should be convinced are true or not. But saying, hey, there are no fairies, that's something that you can demonstrate to be the case. You're claiming knowledge at that point. So it requires a test. It's like, well, show me that there are no fairies. And if you can't do that, then maybe that knowledge claim isn't justified. So I think what Larry's explicitly doing is showing that, like, how you listen to the person and what you hear from them will dictate what kind of questions and conversational approaches you'll try after the fact. But what's really important is just make sure you're listening to the person that you're talking to. That way it doesn't get misconstrued into a more powerful claim than what's
for sure. And it might also come down to what I was saying before, but semantics. It might also come down to semantical differences. Like, under what conditions do you think it's acceptable to use the word belief?
Sure. And it's always worthwhile to just ask the person, what do you mean by that?
Right.
In SE, that's a very common thing. So I would just say, like, hey, what do you mean when you say faith? Yeah, it's
right.
big. That's huge.
Right.
And it's also a really good practice. It's called Rogerian argumentation.
You're going to have to explain it. We have an audience that loves having big words explained, please.
Right. Yeah. So it's a practice that I have, or it's an activity that I utilize in my own classroom.
Uh-huh.
But it is just the practice of listening to somebody's argument, and then what the next step that you do is you reiterate that argument back to them in your own words, and you have them confirm that that is their actual argument.
Oh, that's 3 points of contact. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that's what we call Rogerian argumentation. But yeah, that is also a very useful practice in these circumstances.
It's actually a safety standard at my job. So it's like, hey, I'm going to leave this hammer on the floor. And someone's like, okay, I understand you're leaving the hammer here on the floor. And then they say, Roger. That way, there's not a random hammer on the floor and someone trips over it or something like that. Like, stuff like that will, like a 3-point conversation of just like, hey, I dropped the hammer on the floor. Yeah, I got you. No. Make sure you understand what I said because I don't want you to have a safety issue. It's here temporarily. Let's make sure we 3-point contact it. So yeah, that's very typical.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a kind of a safety measure in conversation.
Yeah.
Am I making sure that I'm actually dealing with your argument as opposed to what my head is your argument?
Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What you construe as their argument.
I always say conversation is always a compromise between what you mean and the choices and the word choice that you use to express that meaning and how that person interprets your word choice to try to translate what you had meant. So it's always like this two middleman situation, even though it feels like, hey, language, I'm just throwing these words out. It's how that person's interpreting it that dictates how well you guys can actually communicate. So if it's worthwhile to like throw out terms that you were really familiar with, like if, for example, someone says, hey, man,
I'm not an atheist, but I don't believe in any God claims. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'm willing to work with that. I can interpret that as like, you don't want to be called atheist. I get it. But functionally in my head, it checks a box in my head of like, okay, well, we are at least on the same page as far as what we believe to be true or require more evidence to believe. But it's just an issue of the word. And I'm fine with that because I get the meaning. And we can probably talk about that later, but I'm not going to force my vocabulary on you.
If they phrase it as, what would you label me as? You'd be like, well, I would label you as an atheist.
Yeah.
Right.
Right? Just in my opinion.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, I know there are people out there that do this, but they kind of get my goat in one particular way.
Go for it.
When if they don't believe in God and they say, but I'm not an atheist. Well, it's one, it's disingenuous. Mm. But two is, it's like they're standing off to the side pointing at atheists saying, I'm not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is troubling, to say the least.
Especially when it's done by like really, really smart people who really do care about the truth. Like, you're on our side here. Like, there's clearly a side that's against, you know, like it's indoctrinating children, is inhibiting progress of science, is reducing limits to rights for women and colored people, and has a terrible history of pitting people against each other for their own profit. And let's not even talk about the sexual abuses and the political destructions and meanderings and lobbying and getting their fingers in places where they shouldn't belong, in a place that should be a separate church and state institution.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of it is their understanding of the word. A lot of times they, you know, if you talk to them about it, they say, oh, I'm not actively working against religion. I'm not an anti-theist. I'm not vocal. Right. I'm not mad.
Right.
Well, none of that really comes into the question at all. It's whether or not you believe in God.
Right.
If you don't believe in God, you're an atheist. Then you should own up to that. You should accept that.
It's literally one answer to one question.
That's exactly.
I had my mom tell me I was going over to the Kentucky Freethought Convention, which will be September 21st. And I told my mom I won't be able to come see her on that weekend. She had asked if I can come over. And I said, I'll be actually talking at the atheist convention. She's a Jehovah's Witness. And we have like, I'm glad that she's like open to like talking about like where I go to talk. But she said, well, while I don't share your atheist belief, I'm really glad that you like still told me like where you're at. So like, I'll know where you are. And I'd only reply like, atheists don't really have a belief to share. that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
So I always find like it's always a misinterpretation of what atheism is, why people find themselves so.
Can I have you repeat something real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
So I think maybe, and I might have just misheard you, but it sounded like you said atheists don't really believe anything.
No, that's not what I said. No. Atheists believe a lot of things. In fact, I would say they believe in more things in common with religious people than not. Like I have more or less almost the exact same beliefs as a Christian, except for the God. So like,
what was the thing that you said then? Do you remember?
Atheism doesn't share beliefs. There's no belief to share in atheism.
So you don't share the belief that
there is no God.
Yeah, right, like there is no God. That's not a claim that atheists have. Like the claim, only claim that atheists purport is I don't believe in a God or I'm not a theist. And that's not really a belief. It's just more of like
it's a lack of a belief.
Yeah, like if anything, it's like, this is just the position that I have, but on this one question, but it's not a belief. Like if you want to ask me what movie I think is the best movie, I can tell you Black Panther was an 8 out of 10. I can tell you, hey, you know, Thor is pretty awesome. I've talked about him multiple times on the show, but yeah, like,
so this would be different from the soul conversation we just had, right?
Yeah.
In that people who wanted to unify about not believing in souls,
mm-hmm.
or lacking a belief in souls might not necessarily believe there are no souls. They might, is that correct?
Right. Like
they might not necessarily believe there are no souls, but they definitely lack a belief that they're souls.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So we got 5 minutes left in the show. How about this? Why don't you tell me one of like the coolest things from your list, or maybe something
And if you have anything you'd like to tout, like a website or something like that, you could give it a shot.
Yeah, as we get into like the home stretch.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. So actually, yeah, that's great. I didn't get to talk about. I think maybe I hit on the successes a little bit, so maybe that would be good enough. I do have those, but Maybe that's at a different time. But in terms of the list, one thing that I would say is really important in terms of conversation that I think helps, or I found has helped, is to have a conversation about, I think I've already mentioned the word, but qualifiers. And that is things that limit your claims, or they describe how confident you are.
Ooh,
in the
I
claim.
Love that.
Right. So when if we're going to use the word most, right? Well, what do you mean? Is most over 50%? Is it 50% exactly? And we have this. And again, the thing that's great is that we have the same intuitions about those words as well.
Yeah.
Usually. And then so that way, when they make a claim about most, you can say, is that actually, do you have a way to demonstrate that it's over 50% to say that it's most, or should we scale that back a little bit?
Okay. I like that.
And I know that you guys are already doing similar things in terms of street epistemology. So there's that.
Yeah. So I can tell you right now, street epistemology is not one thing. And there's, in my opinion, there are a lot of people who are like, this is not street epistemology. Like, don't listen to them, because it's all about talking to people without being a jerk. So if you can fold in what you're doing into SE and inform people of like how to do SE better with this method that you're doing, or run into like hurdles and be like, hey, actually don't do these things. They don't work as well. That makes this whole system of talking to people about anything better.
Yes.
So I would say, hey, let's not look at it as like two separate things. Just see, like, in this field of talking to people that we're all a part of, whether we're atheists or religious or whatever, we found these really good ways of having these conversations about sensitive topics. And this can be folded into like this whole new strategy. My end goal game would be literally to have like this kind of dynamic talk of like talking to people about things they really strongly believe, to be like taught in high school as like a subsection of communication class. Like, this would be like the
critical
perfect
thinking.
Exactly.
How that's my plan, by the way.
Partnered critical thinking. Yeah, you're already in the system.
Right. You're, like, you're in the school. So there's a program in schools now. Maybe you guys will think this is great. So colleges have for a long time been concerned about the public education system.
Okay, good.
And what's going on there. And so one of the program, and I don't even think this was intentional. It actually wasn't intentional. It was built to, the program was made to save money, of course, right? Which is the foundation of almost all of our ideas when we're doing something, in America. But the, Hello. Oh, sorry. But the idea is to, they teach college classes in high school now. Right.
Cool. Yeah. College, what AP, classes?
Like AP courses, like calculus and stuff like that.
No. Actually, direct. They teach those basic. You can get college credits. Called in Ohio, it's called College Credit Plus. And high. So in a typical a basic English or philosophy class, a professor will come to your school and teach you that class, and you can get credit for it, paid by the school, so that you don't have to pay towards tuition.
Oh, wow.
Or you don't have to accumulate loans or something.
Oh, cool. That's great. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, and more and more states are doing this. They have been for a while, but a lot of people who are interested in critical thinking have seen this as an opportunity to get some of those critical thinking conversations that are more typical in a college course.
Dude, I can
make them more typical on a high school course, which is what I'm doing. I'm eventually going to try to teach college argumentation in high school. I want to become a high school CCP teacher. That's my next step.
Well, thank you for that. I think we can make a whole show just about that. But we have a lot of things that we can talk about more. I hope you come back on future shows, and we can have some more time to discuss this.
All right.
Larry, do you ever want to close out the show? My only closing out thing is I miss getting the atheist TV show thing confused, because I had a whole thing about Spider-Man being kicked out of the MCU thing. It was going to be great and hilarious. We got to find some way to work that in. But I do like
next time.
Knocks You Out. I love that. We got to work that in. I think that's better than Dillahunty's Preach Punch and stuff like that. I think we've got something going on here. We should work on that.
Okay. Okay, my sign out as usual is everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Don't worry about it. Time to worry about it is when they prove that hells and heavens and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it.
Bye. See you next week.
Bye. Thanks.
See ya.
Hey, real quick plug from Honest Ape. Go for it.
Yeah, you can find some of my work. I have a YouTube channel, Simple Arguments, in which I'm hoping to produce more videos that do what we're doing. And then also I have a podcast called Currency of Discourse. You can find that on YouTube with my co-host. And we're also on every platform, Apple, We're on a bunch of different ones. You can find us pretty much anywhere.
Cool.
WOZOLP 103.9 FM, Knoxville.
Thank you for having me.